interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 423. You put that number in, hopefully in the future, and you find a pat blogcaster for a reference to somebody's posting of this broadcast, and which normally contains a link to the RLM site to get the blogcaster. The important thing there is when you got to read the information, because I only touch a very little bit of it. Today's going to be one of those days, and we're going to kind of go back to the future in a way and kind of dig through what's been being told to us to understand those really anomalous things we hear DARPA doing or the industries doing really do come together, and they produce products that are, most people don't really think about. And so then we get relative to all this regulation and government that no one wants to seem to stand up and challenge whatsoever. And not just on the nonsense, this illusion. As I was saying, last week's broadcast, forked illusions. That's what we're living through. We keep choosing the forking illusions instead of just staying on the narrow path. And just saying, listen, we gotta just stay to what we need to be doing. And there's nobody out there to protect us or our property. And they are encroaching ever so slightly, if you haven't noticed. And if you have noticed and not done anything, then watch out. Maybe they're going to come here to take you next, only because you probably don't care so much. A lot of people say they care. But when it comes down to actually trying to do something, as I asked last week, can you just write a letter? Can we just write a letter, whatever it is that doesn't kind of fit your sensibilities at all, and it looks like an official authority, and it is an official authority, and you can prove that, and I've explained how you go about doing that. And another official authority coming down and through. And if any of you have paid any attention at all and been looking, and you listen, certainly if you've listened behind the woodshed, I've explained the federal authority relative to any health issue is irrelevant. Now, it's why they issue guidances. There's not an authority there. But there was another issue coming up, another guidance that was happened from the CDC, which, again, is just a federal agency. I don't know. We're going to find out maybe later I get to it. Agencies, even what the Supreme Court deems to be a private proprietor under the color of the post office, they call it, which is really not the post office either, is be given certain rights and can make certain rules which would destroy what you thought was rights. And I think we need to, as a society, we need to really start taking a look at that, get beyond what the illusions are they give us to chew on and say, okay, that's the illusion. Let's get together in earnest and figure out where are we going to hold on? What are we holding on to and what do we need to shed? But the CDC, I was wondering, as I thought I heard this report about CDC giving guidance to the vaccinated, does the CDC guidance for the vaccinated, you know, those with one foot in the grave, the SARS-CoV-2 crip crowd, do those CDC guidances apply to the healthy? Because if you listen carefully, they say this is CDC guidance to the vaccinated. Does it apply to the healthy? Now, if so, because I'm not thinking that it does, and I've told you how you can work it on through, and you can't really disregard this one, even though people want to. If they're speaking to the healthy, if speaking guidance to vaccinated is actually speaking to the healthy, then what would be your response? If it does apply from a federal authority, what's your response? I'm pausing because I hope people are thinking about some of this stuff. What would be your response? It's like, what letter would you write? What do you want to do? What is to be done? Instead of just complaining about how bad it all has been. So if those guidances are purported to be speaking to the healthy, and given there has to be what? That report generated by a local state medical professional, not the state, the doctor, if you will, because the doctor kind of fits a lot here. Given there has to be that initiating report for a suspected communicable principle, in the absence of that report, by what authority does the CDC say anything, even if they have authority? And I want to explain that they don't. And once I think people start to look at this, they're going to realize, again, as I've been saying, the vaccination was a real trap and really big. We're going to find some more. It's going to be more technical today. Not that I'm going to be really up to the task, but I'm going to wing it a bit. I'll do what I normally do to expose to you certain things that you can kind of piece together and connect your own dots. And so I pose this question: if the CDC guidance is for vaccinated people, does it apply to healthy? They'll tell you that it does, but if that's the case, that would be a violation of your state requirement for the initiating order. The initiating report is, that it's sent to the state from a medical professional that suspects that you, my dear listener, is a communicable principal. And without that report, they haven't started the process that the CDC can be relevant to you. And this is the main thing I've been talking since last March, about how we were going to have to work out how this is not applicable. And I said that if you look around, that's going to be, when you start looking at this, that's going to be the same methodology you're going to start to defeat everything that's come onto us as a regulable authority that's only administrative. There are the prerequisites. In fact, if I get to it as well, we get down the road here at the tabs, we're going to explain the Supreme Court will recognize certain prerequisites before the government should act. They actually bring up the question of whether or not an exigent circumstance exists. That's the point. It has to. Some places not so much, but where your health is concerned and your house, those still have at least a little bit of protection, which I have been suggesting. If you don't protect that last bit, and we don't have to go to the Supreme Court to do it, then you're going to be able to keep most of these people, these hounds, these dogs of war, literally, not the doge of war, the little doge that could, the dogs of war that appear to people as authorita, but they don't know it. They think it's authority. They're going to win that day. And I keep telling you, this is the way the system has been set up to incrementally encroach upon you. I've identified this years and years ago. But moving on from the sarcophagus crypt crowd to the cacophonous brood X cicadas, all being driven by the same underlying problem and an agendized type movement, eating trendy brood X cicadas, what the bug recipes taste like. This is what's been promoted as they have you all locked down looking for munchies, I suppose. They're going to push that next, you don't need to eat but insects, and it's now tasty, gourmet-level food that they're going to describe to you that hits the news. CDC didn't come out to tell you what you can do to protect against this, if it's something, and I'm still not thinking it's anything. Again, those comorbidities really came screaming back to us. But they're going to promote that we need to eat cicadas and they can be done gourmet, so they'll be palatable to you. And I hear crickets. Amazing. CDC, risk of coronavirus transmission outdoors greatly exaggerated, bombshell report finds. A stunning New York Times report claims the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimate the risk of coronavirus transmission while outdoors is around 10% is greatly exaggerated. Why do I bring this up? I've been talking about this forever. Everything's exaggerated. It's not exaggerated. It's more fraud. And these people are stunned a year and a half out. In fact, if you think back on the report I did, the court in California accepted that number. And even accepting that number, though he didn't escape having the scrutiny of the court, and I don't know how that case turned out in California, the restaurant owner who was arguing that his business had not been deemed to be an agent and the 10% was not actually identified to be relative to the restaurant, he won still. Is the point I'm trying to make and how obvious this fraud should be to defeat. That we now even have evidence for those of you that are collecting it, and maybe you should be. Again, your folder to defend yourself against an imposition that really I don't know why I say really. It's I don't know how else to say they are imposing this thing at every turn. And they're going to come in every persuasion. Right now, they're coming with a soft approach, trying to get you to accede to their reason and rationale, which you don't question. And later, it comes a lot harder, as we're hearing, that you won't do much without your permission. And in the technology they've chosen as well. And this is the thing I don't get about people getting into digital anything, digital lifestyle, digital finance, digital this, digital that, when reality is what has to work, and you're getting back to money, gold and silver coin. That's tangible. They can't digitize that actually. They can't. That's the real life that these people cannot run down. That's the notwithstanding thing. That's the savings clause. It's these tangible things that you have in your hands that you do amongst each other. Not these statistical nonsenses that promote fraud and really an underlying agenda. So, CDC risks, the report now from the media comes out a year and a half late that these numbers are exaggerated. And we could tell that coming in if you just did a basic research on the rules relative to what a case was. Not how the CDC defines it in promoting the fraud and the brokerage of HARMA. Remember, the P's are silent like Pfizer. It's HARMA. Pharmacological pharmaceuticals. They're promoting that. It's like the WHO. They're just a surrogate for the international non-governmental organization brokering HARMA around the world. And they're intrinsically tied. Now, the media doesn't look at that, and the media doesn't go look at the local rules to see that there had to be a case was defined a certain way. And that was required to have a medical report from with someone's name on it. And that's the one that the government focuses on. And that's not to the beat down of their control. That's really then they start to work what would mitigate the contagion in that principle. So in other words, it may not be that quarantine is needed. That's within the discretion once that is made by the first report. That's within the discretion now of the agent. Not what we've been watching. So it's a bombshell report, stunning. Oh, we got all the trigger words, all the clickbait words. And this has been an ongoing thing that I've identified for you since last March. And I say that, it was actually just before, but I say that because that's when I remember hitting the there is no test, and I convicted in the fact that there's no way to prove what they had been coming on to. And then we've been watching just the innumerable reasons why this is just probably the largest fraud on mankind ever pulled, and it's still going on. So this devolves into other things, and I was sent an email, and it was the statement was that the Red Cross is now saying they can't take blood from people who had COVID. And again, talk about sensational. People want to sensationalize this fraud, and they don't get to the fraud. They stick in the sensation. So I check all this stuff down as best as I can. Sometimes I'm relatively successful quick. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes I have to do just enough work to bring myself into a belief that what I've found is sufficient to protect its own information to be what I've decided it is based on the facts I've read. In this case, the story came, fact check was a response to me looking around. The claim that Red Cross wouldn't take COVID-19 vaccinated plasma anymore. And this has a dual problem. Like all these issues are dual problems. I don't even know why you would want to take blood anymore with what now we find out the system does with it and for it and what they claim they're to do with it. However, it's up to you to decide. Red Cross says it was saying that they does not reject plasma donations after the claim that they were not taking blood plasma from COVID vaccinated people. And their response to the blood donations tanked. So they came right back out and said that they clarify. And this is where you have to start reading carefully the words. This also shows you all the forks in the illusion that are giving the forked illusions given to you to accept. But you have to pay attention. You know, so that's why I'm even talking about this. To me, part of me doesn't want to talk about this, but it's because there's so much deception around it, and it lulls people into a belief system or an anti-belief system. And that is the division that's going to be used to drive a wedge in this country. any of those wedges will be driven by these ignorances that we hold and we don't clarify. And I'm not saying because I say them, I see them, I see the clarity. I'm saying I believe I have pathways to develop a clarity that's going to be far and away better than most people when you put it in yourself, is going to be more protective of a condition. And again, it's not about an argument. You just lay out the facts. And then that is because you have the ability, you have the right to free think and free speech, and you have the right ultimately to freely choose. Notwithstanding all you hear about the coercion, but the fact check on this claim that the Red Cross was not going to take plasma was that the Red Cross does not reject plasma donations from people who got COVID-19 vaccines. Listen carefully, the distinction now, just not accepting convalescent plasma. And so we think, oh, well, okay, yeah, they're still accepting it from COVID vaccine people. What, do you really want that blood? Do we really, really know what they do and they think it's safe and these byproducts? See, they're saying, they're talking now, they split it up into products. This is one of the products, convalescent plasma. This has a very particular use. It was being used, and you heard these stories and we reported on them, to take plasma from these people that were have COVID to give them give the people who just got COVID the blood from people who have the antibodies, so their body it would work like, if you will, like a vaccine. It would reinforce their body to produce antibodies quicker. It would already have those antibodies. The body would recognize it and attack the whatever it was they claimed was attacking you, and it would limit the symptoms. Now is here's the story. It's not the sensational part that the Red Cross was saying they're not going to take blood completely from COVID vaccine people. It's why they're not going to accept convalescent plasma. And this was the bigger story that I think is missed in the telling. Oh, they're not take danger, Will Robinson. Don't take blood from someone with COVID vaccine. And so what the problem ends up being, and why the FDA issued new guidelines. I think it was the FDA that did this. Not the CDC. I think what it was they found out that the vaccines, and you'll have a link to this here when you get in the blogcaster, so you can see it, hear it for yourself from a news story, that the vaccines that are being issued wipe out the antibodies, making the convalescent plasma ineffective. In other words, if you just heard, I mean, straight up, it destroys the antibodies that were used by people who were getting the COVID as a therapy to help their blood maintain an antibody response. Those antibodies are destroyed by the vaccine. Okay, can we put at least two to two together and said, well, then how is it giving it to you and then destroying the very antibodies they claim the vaccine, a vaccine, is to create for you in the future? And so here we have people that, I mean, these are the trail of line that of lineage of linkage that went to me to the email are people that are very well-meaning people. I wish all of them would settle down and really look at the problem and stop running sensational cover. Yeah, it's a big deal, I guess, if you want to just run they were stopping donations from COVID people altogether. You want to stop there, but the more important thing is our future. And that is detailed in the vaccines, so called. All right, these are treatments. These are the software of life. These are updated. And we're going to figure out, I'm going to show you, there's some evidence out that was kind of outside of the realm of when you talk specifically to vaccine, but how they're made. We're going to come to some of the science behind it. But you're going to find out put together what these things are. And why, and there are more, and I'm going to say it, I said this at the miners, Jefferson Monument District meeting here Friday, which we did have another meeting, and thank you for those of you that showed up. We were talking about some of these things, and you'll find out that the science behind it is in very simple science, it's very interestingly applied. And when they were telling us that the spike protein and the chemicals would go into a cell and explode them, it looks like that's exactly what it does. We talked last week about making matrices. It can do that. This stuff is programmable. The science outside of vaccine, what they do and been coming on to for decades to come onto this, has been written for us to read. And so we're going to kind of go through that today. That this is a technology which not only destroys the antibody, but makes you more susceptible now. You see why it makes you more susceptible in the future, and all vaccines do this, to an ailment in the future. And why I've been telling you, this is like confirmation day again, why I've been telling you these people that, for whatever reason, I mean, for good natured or not, good intelligence or not, good reasons or not, are going to be the jabdemic that I was saying early on would be the real problem for us. We move into another business, and this is what I think we're going to have to start doing as people that are asymptomats, those of us that aren't the vaccinated to which the guidances apply. And I think we have to listen to those guidances very carefully, because these guidances are actually talking about the underlying sciences that have been applied, the failures in that science, the problems in that science. But coming, I got a video from BitChute Link. Been vaxxed, keep on moving. We don't want your business. You are a threat to our safety. And so this is readily coming on with people looking. Now, you'll hear at the end of this newscast through BitChute, as a newscast, that the government looked into this woman's claims that she won't, I think a hairdresser or somebody doesn't want anything to do with these, like the doctor said, I'm going to give you 30 days to distance yourself a bit. Well, we're going to find out. Well, we've already found out that's too soon. But this woman in a business, I don't even want to see you folks in my work, in my business, and you threaten my employees. The government came back and looked at her claims and said they were unfound. And yet if you will go through some of the documentation, and likely anybody who's done this has found this all out themselves, the underlying science, the underlying, what I told you before, and I didn't finish that thought, was when you look at this, as I was talking to the guys at the meeting, that if you interpret this as a chemical weapon, not a biological weapon, not a life weapon, but a chemical weapon, it makes a ton more sense. In fact, I don't remember enough. I even communicated to you. I told you when I was on the broadcast, I didn't understand this tertiary bounce infection. Let's say, remember that study that was done that a male member of the research team checking on people with COVID and doing the investigation, if they had a woman at home that did get pregnant or had been pregnant, they had a special file for those women to keep track of them for what? Well, I think it was 3 years. And I couldn't understand, because we've been told there's nearly no contact infection. And I had to think about that. And I don't know if I've communicated. I'm going to do it. If I did, I apologize. I've forgotten. I'm going to say it again because it's so important. The model I came up with was the stories that I'd heard in doing research about honeybees of women who had never seen their husband, the beekeeper's husband's hives or apiary, who over time finally who never got stung, who never were involved with the bees whatsoever, who in some future point experienced an anaphylactic reaction to bee poison. And I think I did, as I say this, I think I did explain it, but this is so important to understand that I couldn't, that was a model that I think I came, I believe I've now, and I'm sticking to this one because it keeps working out, that this was a chemical attack, the exposure, the third party exposure to which, without an infection, an infective principle here, without a communicable principle relative to infectious biological diseases, so those theories, there was an interference with someone's life function. That ended up being the poison and the stings on the clothes, and the aerosolization of that, or the contact, the skin contact to that, that caused someone who was never in contact with bees or got stung to experience being contacted by bees or got stung. And some died. Some people died. And some people were seriously sick. That's the model, I believe, is the most reasonable thing to apply here. This is a chemical attack, what they're doing. This is why you can have an attack where you don't have an infectious condition to build up and then transmit. And because these things appear to be in one, at least I don't know all the different strains, attack to women and the sterility question, why their partners of these researchers were checked and the conditions, and then they don't even know downstream from that. The sterility of women, or the ability, I guess just generally sterility of women, was being checked because this is one of the things it attacks. It doesn't go after the men directly like that. At least there's no direct evidence. So the chemical weapon model makes much more sense on this. If we turn it into that and stop this biological nonsense, like someone can blow chunks of biology on you, I think the chemical weapon attack is much more plausible, and it's much more dangerous in the fact that they need proximity. And you see where the proximity is. It is in this contact. It's why they want you distanced, because part of that was being able to watch. If people are keeping distance, they can watch cleaner how the response of this experiment that's going on, you guinea pigs. And you think, oh, I didn't get the vaccine and I'm not a guinea pig. You're a guinea pig. You didn't get the vaccine, you're part of the experiment. How long will you hold out? This is really a chemical attack, a biological warfare, which is not biology. It's attacks biology. And so I want you to consider this, because I'm going to go to some chemistry here today. Not that I'm a chemist, not that I know anything more than I thought my aspirations when I was very young anymore. I'm just looking at pieces and parts and putting things together. Things I put together tend to come up with what we've been told the whole time, why they're doing what they're doing. And this is a much more dire condition. And it has nothing, let's say, getting rid of the fact of the causation that we think came from China, that we think may have even been something. It's now in the world that we're having to deal with it because of this vaccination. And a number I saw was 230 million injections. Well, that was all the world. At first I thought it was the United States because it was coming from a United States source. But 230 million doses going to all the people of the world. If I thought that was America, I thought we were done. But anyway, so it's not. We're lucky yet. Only 60 million have gone to the double dose. And so you start doing your own numbers. I'm not going to do all those. I started to do it. And I said, it doesn't matter. We just need to keep track of what this thing is. It's a chemical weapons attack. And they're using the agents of that dispersal to be the people that are getting the vaccine. And I wasn't wrong. My thought is still, I wasn't wrong to go there quick, early on, before even we got into this thing. But to understand it as chemistry instead of biology works much quicker to come to the points of what they've been doing. Now, CDC warns, I want to just mention again, not to say, oh, go on and on, that there's vaccine side effects. I want to mention one side effect that they're recognizing that kind of blew under the radar. I've mentioned it, but it becomes more important when you start to hear more of what these things, there's a lot of information I have to synthesize, distill down to something that you can hear and get. I don't know if I'm going to get to all the points. You'll see it when you do the reading, for sure. But they had side effects, and this is where I heard, this is the story about the 283 million coronavirus vaccine doses have been administered worldwide. And this was as of March. Okay, so lots of people are getting this thing for fear-based and all that. I've got no judgment on that. You hope that they would think better, but people are they trust an authority. Secondly, I don't know that we're a community, we're a population of people on this earth anymore that can actually think clear enough to watch out for ourselves anymore. And so in this story, they talk about Israel is like right on top with the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine works out, how they work out. And so we go through and that there's these side effects, not death. So this is the other problem, that VARS, I think there's up to over 10,000 now effects. Again, the doctor last week, if you listen to that video, talking to senators of Texas, said that after 15 problems in prior vaccines, they would shut this whole thing down. And we're well over 11,000 on this. You're dealing with a different animal. You're dealing with psychopaths. I don't know what else you call these people. Who else would do this to people? You go down through here and they talk the list again. And I just wanted to touch on this. The two are local that they're adding to this as of March was pain and swelling. They're only, and again, this is only what they're telling us. Although you see the VARS, it goes on and on and on. A lot of it is neurological problems, which I want you to start to focus on here as we move forward. But they mentioned something here about fever, chills, tiredness, and headache. Again, flu symptoms, right? But focus here on headache, because to me, it's not like a standout, oh, put the neon lights. This starts to rise to the top, because the headache problem is really indicative of the neurological attack that starts to happen. It seems to me. Again, I'm not a medical professional. This is not a disclaimer. I want you to understand, I know I'm limited in my ability to tell you certain things. So, I mean, it may sound like a disclaimer. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an attorney. Right? I'm not a chemist. The point is, I'm limited, like any one of us would be, in any of these specialized subject matters. And so we're already at a disadvantage. And I want you to know that. I'm at a disadvantage to even describe this. I feel a little bit hesitant to describe it. But I'm hoping, those of you that have it in you, have it in you to protect yourself and understand and how to communicate with these people that are sold, have bought in so deep and so invested in this fraud and this harmful technology. That's what you're facing in the future, that you prepare your mind and you prepare your facts and you prepare your records right now in order to be able to meet it in the most empathetic way, I guess is the other part. I believe we're underneath that too. We don't want to insult even those that don't understand they're insulting. I don't know. That just seems to be a better way to go. I don't know why. It doesn't seem, I mean, it's like turn the other cheek in a way, but it's not, you still have to engage it. So it's not really just turning and not really paying attention. They're going to be in your face. The government is giving license to people and itself to be in your face. And it's coming underneath, I told you that Title 50, which is a war against the people that don't even know that. So I read and I wonder what I'm missing. Headache. And I've talked a little bit about this, I know a lot, actually, the neurological problems, and there's lots of long medical terms about this regarding your brain, your brain stem, your nerve sheaths, all this long words that make it sound like you don't, or you can't really understand by the word unless you have the medical library dictionary in your mind what specific parts they're talking about. And that slows this study way down because you've got three or four different specialized sciences or non-sciences. This medical thing is just fraud, from what I can tell. It's all essentially made up. And so you have to tear through that language in order to do it. And it's tedious, it's time consuming. And I don't say do it to the where you're the, you know, you know, you can. If you've got more, if you're the Energizer Bunny on this, please do so and then let us know. But I do so much that I am then understanding what I look at the phrases, the preface. The prefixes of the words and all that stuff, and I say, okay, this is where this is what's a generality going to. And that's what I'm speaking to today. So look at headache here. It's come out again. They added more side effects. It's, again, this is the cooked books talking to us, what they'll let you know. And so this, even to show you how easy it is, a story came up. Eric Clapton, since Grimner does the blues right before this broadcast for 4 hours, so you should tune in. I get to listen to, as I'm doing my setup for a couple hours, I get to listen to all kinds of rock and blues. Eric Clapton certainly played on that broadcast. Feared he'd never play again after disastrous reaction to AstraZeneca jab. And so we can you read the story. Now we heard the title. You can go through and read it. What was interesting and what I found he was saying, he says, he's a guy that's been anti-official, anti-government, anti-this, anti-that. And he capitulated to this vaccine anyway. And now I guess the point is here, those of you that may stand up, if you will, to the man, can be persuaded to accept. That might not be some of you, my listeners, that are the most stodgy here. My point is, there's a lot of people, even those that would fight the man, so to speak, not the man, that's the big joke. It's a system. You're the man. You're the woman. You're the one that's supposed to stop that system because they're there to encroach. But Eric Clapton, who professed, at least in these stories, to say, I've been always against protesting these systems, these organizations. I decided to go ahead and agree. It was the worst decision I could make. I'd never do it again. And he had neurological problems that lasted for 10 days. Now, that's just like any flare-up. That's like, in a way, if I think about what they say, herpes comes and goes. You know, you get a flare-up and then it goes away. That's what this is going to do. This is a neurological, well, that's not neurological, nerve. It has to do with the nerves of the cells as well, or the nerve system in your body, all over your body. So it affected him immediately. Interestingly, it affected him immediately where he was practiced, right? What he's done all his life. And I think that's another potential clue. I don't know if these evil demon psychopaths are that connected, but it's possible. I guess anything's possible, that they've designed these things that if you're using it over a system in your body, again, these chemistries are programmable. And also, this one, and we've heard about it, I'll use the term so we know where we're going, it's hydrogel. Even though I couldn't find the specific, all the ingredients to make it, I can make it up by the component parts, the pieces inside the pieces. That I was telling you, that remember Dr. Maydej was telling us after we heard it from, I think it was a coroner or somebody, health official in Montana, that I had identified before, that pulled it all together and said, yeah, these are really going on here. That these hydrogels, and hydrogels are not special like DARPA special stuff. They actually happen in nature. They've just been adapted. And they're very, very convenient. But they can be programmed. And one of the components of programmability is thermal adjustments. So if you think about, maybe if you do finger motions all the time, or wrist motions, or playing, or you run, or you do whatever, you sit up and down, you jump up and get a coffee and sit down, and you get these certain things going on in your body, and those joints are working more, or certain aspects of what, your lungs are working all the time, your diaphragm is working, it pulls blood into certain areas. Those may, because of the increased heat, or anybody with inflammation, a predisposition, someone with arthritis, that's a heat. The stuff goes to those areas, and they can be programmed to respond to the heat and self-construct at that point. So these are absolutely fascinating things that man has done with chemistry and things like that on one hand, and they're terrorizing on the other when you realize that there's psychopaths at the switches and the levers of this thing. So Eric Clapton, he claims he was a protester of government and all these organized stuff. He capitulates, and then he regrets what he said. He regrets what he's done. And this is one of those things, once you get it in, you can't get it out. It's going to be, your body's going to adapt. Whether it does properly or not is another question, but this thing is not going away. And so, word to the wise, not even just even those that are against the officials and government and protest the overpress, the oppression and this and that, you too can be persuaded. But it looks like you're going to regret it. So moving on, someone who maybe Eric Clapton should have spoken to, because I saw a little picture of Eric Clapton sitting with a little 5-year-old prodigy, it said, and playing one of his new songs, and he's sitting there watching and enjoyed it. So it's not like he can't listen and watch kids. Got an email. Epic, 10-year-old, epic, it says, epic. This is the whole point about our society, epic. When a 10-year-old rips up school board over mask mandates and teacher hypocrisy. I will add, this is just a mitigation, mask or mitigation, so is the vaccine. And so it is, I guess, epic, because nobody, it's crickets. This kid's not a cricket. Stands up in front of his school board and lays into them about the hypocrisy of the teachers. It's very interesting to listen to him speak. I have a link to the InfoWars, which has the video. I guess you could go watch. It was the quickest way I could pull this together. But I want you to notice something. It's interesting too. At the end, the fist bump the cop gives him, who's in a mask, and this little kid is talking, laying it out, folks, laying it out. It may have been prepared speech, but don't worry about preparation. Preparation for a speech is a good thing to do during a 3-minute time schedule, which the kid barely makes. But if it gets down to the point when you hear him complaining that he's being adversely affected, you're listening to the witness of child abuse. On something in a class, remember last week, if you read blog, watch that video that was in the blogcaster, the doctor at the end of the Texas said, this class of people is a buffer group. They do not get this. 99.997 do not get this thing. You're listening to child abuse. then watch, and I don't know what, I don't know if he was the end. I don't think they would have put him at the end of the movie, but look, or the video, but look at the hearing. You see him walk off, and there's nobody standing behind him. No adult came in after him to speak. There should have been a society of people. Every mother and father should have been down on that school board. And not just talking about the mitigation side. But I want you to notice, for as epic, this shouldn't be epic. We shouldn't have our sons and daughters having to make this statement. But to me, that okay, we can go epic because that's a clickbait. But let's look at the reality. You listen to the witness of child abuse, if you will, so legal says it, and there was no one, no mother or father behind it to back it up, and no line clamoring to get to that microphone. So we can rave at what this 10-year-old did, and he did a good job. However, it sounds, some of it sounds, he did a good performance too, to prepare, to present. I think a little bit, that is a little bit of a play, but that's what you need to do. You need to get into that as well. You have to believe in what you're saying as well. And so, epic. 10-year-old rips up school board. Very interesting what he's brought up. I would hope that more people come, mothers and fathers, stand up behind that and take piece by piece what he said and attack every bit of it through the, what I've been saying before, that that school board has no authority, the local health official has no authority to act on anybody that doesn't have a report filed on them in generated, created, made by a state-licensed health official, state health professional. It's all in the rules, folks. It's all in the law for you to see that. And so you're watching people, you know, school board being asked to make equity out of this condition by a 10-year-old who has no right to ask for it. Think about that one. Well, unless the pedophiles get it, and then everybody down to three is going to have every right in the world, aren't they? If you haven't noticed what they've been doing. That's in the school system, too. So, you believe in your family. You believe in mothers and fathers. You believe in your grandmothers and fathers. Where are you? Is not so epic in my mind, but congratulations to the young man, 10-year-old, at least gives it his shot. I'm pausing again. I want people to think about this. Can you write your letter, folks? It's that simple. We don't have to go to war. We're in a war, but we don't have to go to war. And I've been trying to tell people the Second Amendment, right, that's not the kind of war that the Second Amendment's going to help you, and they're incrementally eating away at that all the time. So what do we, you know, what is our choice going to be as we move this along to find the maladministration of the government? Is COVID-19 fraud? And that the 10-year-old is the only one that's there to actually out that? And we listen to child abuse, as it would be defined, and the sheriff behind him doesn't make a report? Doesn't file the report? I don't even know what to say. I'm just thinking, I'm just stunned. And then we come back here. Well, what's the mitigation that young man was talking about being subjected to a mask? He didn't get to the vaccine problem, the worst one. The one that might actually be affecting his future sons, brothers and mother, brothers and sisters. Whose mothers and fathers didn't understand they're under attack even if they didn't get vaccinated because they are part of that experiment. We continue to hear what this is all about from the past, what they were telling us. What I told you, well, focus on the NIH and you're looking at Fauci, you're looking at AIDS. They're looking to push a bad theory into reality. And we have a story from the AP, a gene therapy that makes use of an unlikely helper, the AIDS virus, gave a working immune system to 48 babies and toddlers who were born without one, doctors reported Tuesday. This is like the cicada story I broke into. They keep pushing that this stuff is good for you and it's better than what you have, and this is what you should be choosing. See, if they get you to do it, then they don't have to do the harder job of actually keeping this food, beef from you and meat and all that stuff and other things that you would like to have in your life. But they use the AIDS virus, a dead, think synthetic here, AIDS virus. This is all synthetic. It all comes from the same source here that the COVIDs has been come from. All the same players. That this was in a way, I look at this and say, well, if this is true, this is very cool, right? But this is the promotion. You have to understand what to balance this off with. You're supposed to balance quarantine off with and someone who wants to become, it was an infectious principle of a communicable disease and does not want to keep themselves private for a while. It's the risk against the rest of society. When you have someone that will self-quarantine or quarantine under direction or do what they need to do, then that's not a problem for everyone else. And so you're looking, and this is just like fire, the fire mitigation. And you see fire managers versus fire extinguishment. And this is what it is. It's against risk management. That's what the world you live in. These 48 babies, there was 50 actually, to this gene therapy didn't work. But their bone marrow transplants were successful. So they were given an immunity. In other words, you have to see that they didn't need a deadened AIDS virus, a synthetic thing, to be the agent of genetic change in the body that cut itself in to give it to give the little ones that had a genetic defect, and there's a number of them apparently, that cut itself into their genome in order to give them an immune system, which now allows them to be normal, if you will. And they're looking at, it's been going on for 3 days. Think about all the dynamic that's going on about this. They can cut into your genes with this gene therapy. But it's up against what? Little ones that would die. The risk of death is very high. And if you don't give them, find some answer, they will die. And until they do, they cost a lot of money, a big money sponge for the system as well. The results show of this gene therapy show that all but two of the 50 who were given the experimental therapy in the study now have healthy germ-fighting abilities. That's cool for them. Do not forget, we're talking about the same gene therapy that's going on with the current treatments that they're given as a viable emergency authorization experiment to everyone who will accept it at this point in the COVID-19. Nonsense. It says here, we're taking the otherwise what otherwise would be a fatal disease and healing most of the children with a single treatment. The women, the children, and the indigenous. This is not different than the cicada, eat your cicadas, gourmet as you will. Women and children and the indigenous is the agenda. And they come up with one thing, and they kind of let you look past all the other stuff that's going on that would not allow them to use this on anyone else. Why? Because you're looking at the risk-benefit scenario in truth. However, they show that at least two of them who didn't have successful bone marrow transplants finally did have them, and we know that there's an alternative. The children were so severe, had severe combined immunodeficiency syndrome, at CSID, which is caused by inherited genetic flaw that keeps the bone marrow from making healthy versions of the blood cells that form the immune system. Without treatment, it often kills in the first year or two of life. It became known as the bubble boy disease because of the case in the 1970s involving a Texas boy who lived for 12 years in a protective plastic bubble to isolate him from germs. It's now called baby bubble disease because roughly 20 different gene defects, including some of the effect girls as well as boys, can cause it. A bone marrow transplant with a genetically matched sibling can cure the disorder, but most kids lack suitable donor and the treatment is risky. The Texas boy died after one. the patients now are treated with twice weekly doses of antibiotics and germ-fighting and antibodies, but it's not a permanent solution. The doctors think gene therapy might be. And so this, you can see, this is still the experimental stage, even if it is for these 48. This is the same technology they're giving to people in the world right now for this thing that doesn't exist, COVID. And if it does, there is no test. So tell me how you're going to prove it. And worse, for the law and the official to work, they have to have you, some doctor telling a report that you have a communicable principle that they have to take a tighter scrutiny on. The story goes on. They remove some of the patient's blood cells and you use a disabled AIDS virus to insert a healthy version of the gene that the kids need and return the cell through through IV. Now, I wanted to know, if they can do CRISPR, why don't they just do that? Why are they exalting this AIDS thing that's actually a fraud? Go back and do the research. They haven't identified a virus that causes an autoimmune deficiency syndrome. That's just like saying you have the flu. And yet they're using this therapy now to have this thing that they have identified or synthesized to go in and do gene editing. And I just want to remind you again, this is the same technology they're using today for COVID. Now, what is, I want you to focus on this. These kids apparently are doing very well on this. They die within a year. Does the medical profession know any one of you is going to die within the year that they're giving you the same style of offer? That 40% of you apparently offered it are taking it? Again, what was the risk against it? When you have 99.97% unaffected, you're an asymptomatic, can't be affected, why are you offering this treatment that's a risk and an unknown? Anyway, you could read the story. It's fascinating what they could do with this. Why they're using, when they have the power to make a synthesized gene, why they're not just cutting it in is a concern for mine. I think I can answer it in HIV has been such a, well, it's a fraud, that they have to keep making it relevant. I told you that was going to happen. Here's another one of those stories. But you have to understand, when that story tells you that everybody that's getting the jabs here, see, I almost said it again, the treatments coming from oncology pharmaceutical companies, these gene treatments, yes. Gene treatments are the same that they give to people that die within a year. And I don't know of anybody that would be known, absent any comorbidity, to be able to say they were going to know that they were going to die in a year, although no man or woman knows the time. Correct? And so I found this story fascinating. Really, really cool. Really cool technology. You give 48 young people, an immune system that they're genetically predisposed to not have. I guess you could say cull them. I guess that's what would have happened in other jurisdictions. However, technology is very cool that way, given it works that way. But the question is, why are they using a fraud? And what did they actually do? What are they actually doing? Why did they use other technology that they claim that they're also using in other places that say it works better? Anyway, don't want to get so deep on this. Just make a monument of this point, that the risk benefit is known death within a year versus not, is what they're doing to do experimental treatments on babies. Let's move into the ingredients, because this is where it starts to, what did they put into that? They said it's a dead AIDS virus. Well, no one identified the virus. That's a story they're making up. They may believe it, but it's still a story. So I still wanted to fascinate it. What did they use to do this? And you'll find out they don't know. This is all a big guess. So another thing you put in the back of your mind. So what ingredients are in the COVID-19 vaccine was an interest to me, because we talked about the SM-120 component of of one of the vaccines. I can't, what was it? Oh, the Moderna, I think. And it came through last week. And those, I don't remember where I've been getting all this now, but some of you send me stuff in the email. Thank you very much. Gives me the heads up of what's on. I really don't study a lot of this. I've really been a lot going on trying to keep up and trying to make proper responses to people. It's just taken a lot longer than, again, I don't type, and it takes a lot longer to communicate some ideas, and there's a lot of things to have to discuss. And anyway, so it's taking me a little bit longer to get out my information to try and help people, keep them moving in a path forward, not standing around. This came back through quickly, a link to me somewhere. The ingredients that are now advertised, CTGov, I guess that's Connecticut, huh? Connecticut? Moderna vaccine, Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, what's in them? What the characteristics of? And we have in the Moderna, as I'm reading it now, the SM-102, comma, and listen carefully because this becomes the chemical components that we're going to now, however skillfully, without training here, pull together to show you when we talk and reference hydrogels, or we reference certain types of constructions or the controllability of these materials. If you listen carefully, and this is going to be a whole lot of mind stuff you got to remember here, I'm just going to warn you. The pieces and parts of chemistry are the pieces and parts of chemicals that put together because they link up. When you look at how long these, this is under being lipids, are constructed, you realize they're made of pieces and parts of things that they can be breaking down because chemistry is changing and adjusting and catalyzing and all this kind of stuff. That, listen here, SM-102, we now have the data sheet, but it came through the OSHA for its safety, which it's not. We'll get to that. That the next list for with that ingredient is propylene glycol, PEG-2000. Okay, then it goes through a bunch of longer chemistry, and I don't want to butcher it and waste a lot of time. You can read those. The easy one I can see in there is cholesterol. You'll see that as well. That's a lipid. That's a fat. And we'll talk in chemistry now more in lipids instead of fats. I guess I can go between the two. You just have to keep track of this because we're going to get to very fascinating technology. You do it when you make up mayonnaise. It's natural. You use eggs to do this, so it's not DARPA, out of mind stuff. However, natural stuff can be synthesized into more exotic things and through different avenues. And that's where we're going to try and penetrate a little bit today to show you that what's in these things, you look as a clear liquid, you think it's just like water, actually are pretty fascinating. That one of the things that came onto me in looking at this, these lipids are one of the things that allows it, when blended, to become clear. And you cannot tell they're in there or what it is that's in there. And they make up, and they can respond in chemistry within environments to make up new stuff. And they use body systems in order to make up new chemicals and new things like enzymes. It's mimicking like what we claim a virus does when it goes and penetrates the mucous membrane. That uses your body's functions in order to make the next thing it needs to keep going into the cell, into the body. So here we have SM-102 and polyethylene glycol. I only focus on that and on cholesterol sits there because these become something else. They have acetic acid, sodium acetate, and sucrose. Sucrose is important in one aspect. The acetic acid appears to be a preservative, but that acetate that sits there, the sodium acetate, could be broken down, and it creates for another type of chemistry that is part and parcel to how they go about chemically attacking you, that this thing works on a chemical basis. And that's why I'm getting a little bit chemistry-oriented here. You go into the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine, they call it vaccine, you also see polyethylene glycol and cholesterol. But you also see phosphocholine, the phospholipid, is part of this. The lipid, remember now, let me get to this so you can maybe get a better idea where we're going to go here. We're talking about emulsions. Now, the emulsion that you likely understand, if you've ever made mayonnaise and you put oil and water and an egg and whatever else, vinegar, whatever your ingredients is to make mayonnaise, and you blend it up real good, you're making an emulsion. It turns white. And what you're looking at is the mixture, because of the egg you threw in the lecithin inside the yolk. The lecithin is a surfactant that allows the combination of water and oil, because you know water and oil doesn't mix. Well, this doesn't mix, but it combines it up as one molecule. And what you're looking at in a mayonnaise is those molecules all stuck together. And when the balance is just right, it holds together like that. Not so much in a salad dressing, where you just mix oil and vinegar and water and you shake it up and it holds for a little while. That's more of a macro style of an emulsion. Turns cloudy too, but then it'll separate, correct? They can't have it separating, especially in this pharmaceutical stuff. So I just wanted to go through. We have a list now within these documents. It's the SM-102 is still, at this point, an anomaly. It was proprietary. We didn't know. When I heard that, if I had any other thought, when they went proprietary ingredients they weren't talking about, that was off my list. Wasn't going to do anything with it. However, smart people out on the internet having a little bit of time tracked down, somehow they figured out, and I got a link so I could go there too, the safety data sheet of all things that was created for OSHA of all agencies. And this SM-102, Sound Minds, 102. No, he's a much better guy than that. But anyway, and I don't know if he may be broadcasting today or may have some problem with his internet. He'll probably be doing a broadcast tomorrow and using these links and trying to show you as he's watching as I talk. And I thank him for all this dedication. As I want to, as I was thinking about that too, Vinny, years that Vince would put links out after the broadcast, and I didn't have hadn't figured out how to give him links before so we could post this content as I spoke in the chats, but I did after. But he had spent years helping me, being someone who promoted the broadcast, and it, like he was telling me, don't worry about not going on Facebook. He did it literally for years. It was a couple of weeks ago. We talked. He showed me. He reminded me. He did all this posting on Facebook, and it went nowhere. And so I just wanted to thank him again, even though I haven't talked. We don't talk much anymore. He's doing his thing and he's doing some other things going on. But you know, again, it took a lot of work for him to do that, and I appreciated it. Like Sound Minds is doing, like any of you other Normalization of Ignorance, and a couple of others who have just taken the project. The broadcast and made a listing. We can't do that too much on YouTube, and I've asked you maybe not to, because they really are dinging us. But we can go other places, and you have been. Anyway, Vince was instrumental to remind me that Facebook wasn't. There's not a reception for knowledge and truth, in large part in the population, and I've had to kind of accept that. And I told you I've somewhat come to terms. I'm still a little bit rubbed a bit. Like the miners, the microcosm of the miner predicted to me what the society that I'm watching in the world would do. And you have not failed me, mostly. You have not failed me. Some of you that get involved, I really admire that you even get involved and stick and continue to stick with it. The people that I write to and see responding and the work that's going on, it's in a way, I don't know if it's a joy because it's really a pain, but it's a joy, if I can say, to watch the growth, the expansion of knowledge, and then the awareness that comes with some of that. And not just, oh, I know so much. It's, like I said, find something to apply it to. It's so much faster to work. But moving on to this, SM-102, not to be confused with Sound Minds, is a chemical that's add ingredient. We now have the product data sheet that explains what this thing is, and it's a really long name. I won't even go through it. But I noticed it's an ester. And if anybody in chemistry class, if you're in chemistry class, how you make esters, the alcohols are involved, okay? It's like, I can't remember now, I didn't even go back to go find out. If you make an ester, they have a fruity smell, they have smells. They're olfactory producers of fragrance, of good and bad. And so you make these esters and they'll do that. There's one thing that I remember in high school doing quite a bit of. It's fascinating what nature can make on its own as these smells that we smell. So alcohol is important in this, and this becomes alcohols, certain types, become important in creating other things, structuring things inside that are programmable inside these vaccines. Even though you look and it looks clear, all this stuff, I wish I could even say it, I'd be embarrassing to even try. the things that's in this, but still clear, is just phenomenal. So it's a very long name, and I noticed esters are in it. There's octaonic acid involved. These acids, also there's a base acid relationship that has to happen in an emulsion, and they want to keep that structure. It started to speak a little bit why they have to keep the temperature down to sub-zero, I mean, down so like 196 degrees below zero, is because they have to keep these things stable, and they bring them out for a short time, they thaw them, and they got to get them into you because they're on the edge of not being emulsions anymore. They'll start to separate, my thought is. Let me get to the hazards of this SM-102, the thing that they put in the Moderna vaccine. Under the classifications of substance or mixture for flame, says highly flammable liquid and vapor. And you'll get the link here if you already have it. Just focus on these hazards and just think about this, what they're injecting into people and what they've authorized in an experiment to go into you. The second one, folks, there's a GHS-06 rating, skull and crossbones classification, acute toxicity 2, code H310, fatal in contact with skin. Can I say that again? The SM-102 is known by OSHA to be fatal in contact with skin, and it's the component for this vaccine. Health hazard. Well, like, I guess death to skin is not a health hazard. Health hazard, another listing. Carcinogenic. I don't know what REPR2 is or STOTRE. You can read those. You can research those. I just read the long form because it's easier for me to see. Suspected of causing cancer. Suspected of damaging fertility. Men. We can talk about the women. That's also men and the women. Suspected of damaging fertility or the unborn child. Number three, causes damage to the central nervous system, the kidneys, the liver, and the respiratory system through prolonged or repeated booster exposure. Very toxic to aquatic life, I say so, just by reading the first few. This is SM-102, not to be confused with sound mites. Fatal in contact with skin. Just blew me away. Specifically targets fertility. Blew me away. What am I saying? Why am I blown away? I'm not blown away. I'm blown away. It was here the whole time, and no one else seems to want to point this stuff out to anybody and say, wait a minute, whoa, 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 whoa. Mule. Whoa, mule. Yosemite Sam came to mind right there, if you can't tell, those of you that are old enough. Suspected of damaging fertility. Right there. Right in the OSHA product safety sheet. Not very safe. This is a component. Well, this is not just a component. It happens to be the component is a larger thing relative to the formation of a clear liquid. Again, mixing oil and water is what they're doing here, ultimately. And then I came on to another interesting, for me, maybe not for you, but for me it was very interesting, because then I realized what this mRNA is when you put it in the context of an emulsion. But let's breathe a little bit of vaporous, poisonous air with this SM-102. It kills on skin contact. What the heck it's doing? How did they even get it in you? Well, this is where we're going to get there. They can't let it touch your skin initially. And if any does get out, apparently it kills those areas, if not is toxic to you. But how do they get it in? Is the question of really the hydrogel, of what an emulsion does until they're broken down. And so I'll move another link to you, decoding Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine ingredients. And this was relative to the UK vaccine, what they call BNT. BioNTech, I suppose, 162B2. And he goes through in this article and explains this. Pfizer BioNTech is an mRNA vaccine made up of strands of RNA packed in lipid nanoparticles. There. There's your emulsion. They package these lipids, these poisonous on contact lipids. That's why, remember, they said over there in Western Australia, these were poisons being injected. Now we're going down and finding the documentary proof that this is the fact. How do they get them past your body, though? They stick them inside encapsulations packed in fat nanoparticles. These particles, when injected in the human body, will fuse to the cell membrane of a human cell and allow the mRNA to gain access to the machinery needed to translate into a viral proteins. Focus on the protein there, because we're going to get to something else eventually if I can find it in all this information. What is that protein, that so-called spike protein? It becomes a component of this bioweapon that's a chemical weapon attack. All through this fascinating technology, I'm blown away about it. Well, part of the, I was doing a lot of research because I wanted to when I was doing the swarm hives for the honeybees, I was looking to try and emulsify paraffin. I found out my kitchen wasn't a chemistry factory enough to be able to do that. It's actually relatively difficult to emulsify paraffin. I wanted a spray-on type of thing. I still am interested in that. So I've been doing some research on emulsions for quite a while now. Well, up until a month ago, when I finally just had to melt the paraffin and roll it on and heat it up again. So this was in my mind. This is what I've been looking at. I've been watching this RNA, and I don't know if I want to mention it yet. When you look at this RNA thread, the RNA thing they inject you with, it's described in a certain way. It ties into what is required in making an emulsion. And this, the viral protein, is also a part of it. And what they call that viral protein becomes important. I'm going to hold that out. I hope I find the word. But once these proteins are generated, they are packaged and released outside of the cell. This is that explosion that goes on. Once the viral proteins are released, our immune system has opportunity to generate antibodies against them. But remember, we just heard that the vaccine, when you get these things, destroy all the antibodies. How they're getting tests now, if I see it that way, on that style of treatment, is actually a wonder, even using the PCR test. So what you're seeing in the PCR has to be dead cells, has to be complete destruction. Then they say lipid nanoparticle technology in this one article. The core of the Pfizer vaccine is an mRNA molecule that encodes for a spike protein. They say more on this later. In order to get mRNA from injection into the cells of the body, it needs molecular escort. It's a Trojan horse, what's going on here. It's a fat particle that is the Trojan horse. Gets it right by them, right by your cell defenses. By itself, mRNA cannot freely cross a cell membrane. Lipid nanotechnology, nanoparticle technology, solves this problem by packaging mRNA, known as a transcript. Remember I talked about transcription? And then we have transfection. Here they are. Into a complex vesicle of phospholipid molecules that are designed to fuse with our body's own cell membranes. Phospholipid, that's going to be the component. You'll see these in the components. This term, phospholipid, is part of that. So to fuse with the cell. This is, like I said, lecithin. It is one of these things that there's oils that are these things. They're all natural, but they're now, the technology is understood and now synthesized to do, I would say, unnatural things. And so this article then explains that in this ingredient list is, I'm going to try one here. Maybe I won't. But it starts out 4-hydroxybutyl azinidyl bishexane 6,1-diol bis-2-hexyl decanoate. Let me just focus you on a couple here. At least one. That hexane. The hydro has a bit of it here, and there's also a component for the butyl. But the hexane, understand, the hexane sits here as part of the necessity of the emulsion technology. To make this go past your cell defenses. This is a proprietary phospholipid that makes up the basic structure of the nanoparticle wall. These molecules are modeled after native phospholipids found in living cells. They're molecules modeled after. models of the SARS-CoV-2, models of the SARS-CoV-1, synthesized, fabricated chemistry. Now, these phospholipids are the oil part, what they call oil phase, of an oil-water phase emulsion, like you make in your kitchen. The lecithin in the egg is the surfactant which joins them head to tail. I guess I'll throw that out right now. Also in this UK vaccine, and you'll see these different types of components in every one of the vaccines. They got different names, but they're all the same basic described chemical in use. The cholesterol is here in this one, a native, that's your natural stuff, molecule, ubiquitous in the human body. Cholesterol aids in the fluidity or rigidity of a lipid membrane depending on temperature. There's your thermal control. There's one of them. Okay, so they tell you, this is a neat article when it started to lay this out, and I was already seeing some other documents, which I'm putting up after this discussion, so I'll try to lay it out to you. So you could start literally putting the pieces together, what's going on. It's fascinating technology, I can't deny that, but how they're using it is terrorizing. This is just I don't know what else, it's a bioweapon, it's a chemical bioweapon. Pfizer's vaccine includes a synthetically, there's the word, generated version of the coronavirus spike protein. This mRNA has been modified to make it more bioavailable by introducing analogs, more synthesis, of an RNA sequence. They synthesize that model into this. The resulting mRNA is known as a nucleoside modified RNA, mod RNA. The DNA template was derived from a SARS-CoV-2 virus isolated in Wuhan, China at the emergence of the pandemic. Note to self, there has never been a SARS-CoV-2 virus isolated. It's always been described as a model. The genome from the isolated virus was then sequenced and the code for specific antigens were made publicly available. Do you think they could just make up the sequence they modeled before and you wouldn't know the difference? Well, I think so. And I think you're going to find out I don't remember where all the information is here. You're going to find out that they can't tell now. They thought they could tell. They can't tell now. Let me just read here the beginning of the next list about how this works out. The enzyme called polymRNA, called RNA polymerase, and this is the action part of this. This causes the breakdown and the reformulation. Specific mRNA molecules can be generated using a template plasmid. A template, a model. Nothing natural here in any of this. The sequences also need a few key features to make them recognizable to the human cell and safe from degradation. And you're going to see a little of this when I get to ultra emulsions. This is exactly what the problem is that they got to make sure that they can do, because they'll also admit none of this stuff is bioavailable to us, actually. And so I'll read the list of the things they need. I just want to touch the beginning and the end so we don't get lost in the other things. They do include the coding sequence for the spike protein in the middle, but the top is what I want you to hear and the bottom. 5' cap is the first one listed, and the last one is polyadenosine poly-A tail. I want you to change the 5' cap to the word head, and remember the poly-A tail. You have a head and a tail to this synthetic molecule. Why is that important? It's going to be relative to making emulsions and getting a middleman, if you will, to connect those up to make this package that's a lipid emulsion package that they store the payload. They tell us it's a payload inside. Now, I want you to, in this link, and I really apologize, I don't have the way to give this thing out to people. You just have to see it in the broadcaster. As you're listening, you can then pull through this and watch, go through it yourself. And then I'd say go read this information, see how they do this. It's really fascinating science. I promote this just out of the science, but this is a deadly attack, and you have to understand what's going on. So you might come to your mind, you may be genius and figure out, wait, there's a way to get through this. Like one of the stories was to find out, and I'm not promoting all this, you have to see, you have to do all this study so that you don't hurt yourself, that ivermectin, if the story was true, immediately obliterated this lipid. Immediately exposed it, and the body was able to handle it without its going through the transfection point. But if you look a little bit next, you'll see the structure of the typical human protein coding mRNA, including an untranslated regions, UTRs. You'll see the cap on the left is red. It's just color-coded in black. It's like electrons here, electricity, red and black coding. Okay, think of it that way, because this is how the chemistry connects up. The cap is red. The polytail is arbitrarily made black. Happens to be what you would do a DC wiring circuit for as well. I'm trying to bring some connection to the world you might understand relative to something that's just kind of mind-blowing. And seemingly outside of our perception of what's going on. Then they go on, and this article talks about pH swings. They've got to be careful how this all works. This is buffering systems. They have all the salts also become important. They got the sucrose. They explain the stabilization for the transporting in these additional ingredients. Again, I'm not saying become a chemist. Just rest with the information in your eyes, put them in your mind, and just keep moving with this information and let the picture develop of what they've been doing. Again, I'm really tossed. This is some fascinating stuff, except what they're applying it to. So there's another ingredient, and I think it's another, it's not the SM-102, it's another vaccine, and I apologize for not knowing that one. It's claimed to be, I think it was in that, that's what it was. It was in this one from the UK. It's called ALC-0315, and I'm just going to have a wiki for you. You can just find it out, a wiki that just talks about it. It's a lipid mixture in the SARS-CoV-2 vaccine. Okay? ALC-0315 is a physiological pH cationic synthetic lipid that can be used together with other lipids to form lipid nanoparticles. And it has a big old long name, and that's the one with a hexane in it, and that's part of the trick, having to have that in the chemical cocktail that makes up these very interesting things that are natural, actually. These happen to be synthesized in the lab for very particular things, and this is the terror part. Someone sat down and figured out how to do this. I give you a link to this hydroxybutyl azine dine bis hexane diel bis hexyl, yeah, okay. You got it. Long name. Lots of components in this. Go look at all the parentheticals and all the breakdowns. When you look at these breakdowns of the chemistry, these are the parts that get disassembled and then reassembled to do other things in the chemical weapon. It's just fascinating here. This got me onto the comment, and I realized I hadn't proven when I've been saying it. So here's an admission of a defect. If anybody caught it, no one called me on it. And so I'm going to call myself out just a little bit. I wasn't wrong. I'm just going to say I didn't perfect the idea that these are hydrogels, even though I agreed with what I was reading that the doctor had said in, I think it was Montana, and Dr. Maydej said a week or two later that they were dealing with hydrogels. I've never seen anybody actually prove that. Well, it takes a bit to do that, and we're doing a little bit of that today. Why is that important? Because these hydrogels, which is they're useful, and they're made out of a lot of different ways to get at it. It creates the package which they're dumping the payload onto the cell that's affecting you. And again, all you got to figure out, don't get it inside your skin and your body for sure. You don't want the injection. But when it comes to you, you might be able to figure out a way to disassemble the emulsion. And that exposes the whatever it is, and your body can attack it. Hopefully you haven't gotten quite the amount that it just kills you right there, right? I mean, this is the other interesting point about this. But the body's pretty resilient. So I wrote, anybody can do this, DuckDuckGo. I'm still now researching. I'm kind of going through this kind of inside out of how I actually studied it. But you'll see a progression as you read it. I've wanted to understand now proving out hydrogel and relevance to phospholipids, since those are the parts. And sure enough, you put that in DuckDuckGo. I'm just going to show you that it's right there. Phospholipid microemulsion-based hydrogel for enhanced topical delivery in lidocaine and prilocaine. That wasn't what I was after with the outside, but you can see now it can, if you just touch it, it can, they're enhancing the delivery of whatever this phospholipid micro-emulsion is. This micro-emulsion now has my focus because that's what they're making, and we're looking more like we're looking to hydrogel. Again, they're not like DARPA fantastical type technology. Nature does this. What DARPA does is they take it and they move it over and they start applying it to things like what you're seeing in the pharmaceutical industry picks up and does dual use around to do what? Make their weapons more effective. So I pick up an article, totally not about injections, but an interesting reference because another thing came up about the iron. Remember we talked last week in the miners meeting, the Jefferson Mining District meeting, it was commented that iron was involved in some issues relative to this. And sure enough, although it wasn't in the injection for vaccine, it comes up in this article, unknown to me as I'm just looking along, and it speaks to the use of iron to do something relative to a micro-emulsion polymer hydrogel. Don't let a phospholipid polymer hydrogel. Don't get fat weirded out about polymer. It's life's surrounded by them naturally. They need these phospholipids, these fats, in order to, in other words, to make the structure of containment for whatever's inside it. It could be all kinds of stuff. That's not the sinister part. Now, there's a term here. I'm going to have to reference to it. It's a chemical name. It's methacrylic acid, MPC co-methacrylic acid. Now, I couldn't find any obvious acrylic connection to this. That's one of the main, most noted components. We saw acetate, but I don't know that that's acrylic, at least in the first step. If as a chemist that knows that whether or not any of those chemistries can break down to make an acrylic acid or an acrylic component, we will be looking at the next thing that happens relative to why we're speaking of it here, relative to making the payload better and more contained. So it can't be seen by the body. So this is what's called a PMA. This methacrylic acid is called PMA. I'm going to say it again in the next two paragraphs here. One of the things, I'm not going to read this whole article, just one of the things that brings to my mind, and because this started to explain if it's a chemical weapon and it uses your body, and what your body provides is a chemistry set to make more things, it's like catalysts and things like that, then we talked about the magnets last week, that it was going to be drawing the iron to it, to this area. This becomes relevant. Well, this is why this became relevant. Number two, under the methods of this study, was to evaluate the disassociation of MPC hydrogel in vivo. Chambers containing the MPC hydrogel with Fe3, iron 3 plus, one of the states of iron. It becomes what you'll find out is a paramagnetic. It's not magnetic until it's in the field of a magnetism. Remember that the swabs I was talking about that I still haven't qualified the test said the material that they put into your nose was actually guided, drawn to the magnetic field that's said to emanate from the pineal and pituitary gland. And it makes its array, what looked to be a phased array, which also came up in our discussion at the JMD, came out, what I told you looked like HARP. Yeah, there's a phased array that cannot really be focused energy and directed energy and programmed energy as well coming through that. But not to get sensational, just to understand what we may be dealing with. But this iron 3 component helped to contain and extend the destruction of the hydrogen. Microscopic and scanning electron microscope SEM observations were performed after 1 and 3 weeks in order to determine this. I jump over into the discussion way down through the article, and it says the disassociation speed of the MPC hydrogel was controllable by changing the concentration of Fe3, iron, this special state of iron, there's 1, 2, and 3, because Fe3 can interact with carboxylate anions in the PMA, that was that methyl acetate, acrylic, that we mentioned before. The hydrogel is cross-linked via hydrogen bonding and electrostatic interaction. There's your head-to-tail charging on top of it, right? So this result suggests that the local survival of the hydrogel can be controlled in clinical settings. MPC hydrogel has nanoscale pores in a honeycomb structure which may prevent the invasion of inflammatory cells but allow the access of cytokines and growth factors for tendon healing. This was a study on rabbit tendons being damaged and healing, and there was a problem with the healing that this combination was able to do. What? It acted like a what? If it blocked some things and passed others, it acted as a filter, a programmable filter. And so here's where you start seeing the ability to program what's going to enter the cell and what's not going to be entering the cell. And they have a picture on how this works. This was fascinating, but this is also terrorizing. Again, this is a duality here we're watching. And this is what they're letting us know that they've figured out. We don't know the proprietary secret stuff as well, and I don't want to get too fearful about that, but we really don't know this thing that they're watching. They make these hydrogels to act as controllable filters. And so we're seeing a molecule of something that is completely programmable or controllable. And it all depends on what they put together with it. Then I ran across, running right over to microemulsions, I found it very cool for me. I don't know what everyone's interested in, but after looking at all these emulsion things and being fascinating that these vaccines are emulsions. They're not like mayonnaise. They're clear. And running across this review, which says it's easy to understand, and you have to keep your mind in it, but yeah, it went right through this stuff. It made some very astounding claims about what we're watching. And now I want to get back to the future, if you will. What they've been telling us, why they've been doing certain things, why they have certain aspects going, maybe why the boosters are required, are all in the discussion of the failures, the problems with not only pharmaceutical bioavailability, but the microemulsion technology itself. So I'm going to read some stuff here. We get through quickly. And I'm trying to give you an idea on how, it's just fascinating. This is just some cool stuff. But what we're dealing with, and then think about who was sitting there all this time coming up with this Trojan horse that's going to deliver the payload that is interferes. It's the software of life. And every bit of it appears to be, well, to the extent of its chemical need, programmable in some way. So abstract, we'll just get to the first part of this, and I'm going to jump down a little farther after because it makes some fascinating admissions, which explains why the CDC gives some of the guidances that they have been all along. So we didn't know, well, you have suspicions back when. Now it's proven why. You can see that the technology is a certain thing, a certain way, and they have to do certain things, otherwise the whole thing falls apart. I mean, it's going to fall apart anyway, it's a fraud, but I'm talking about the technology in its implementation, which is to reprogram your body somehow, or cause it to be a shedder, cause it to be the implementation of destruction. Microemulsions, again, this is a very sophisticated, actually, I think it's a misunderstood thing. It's an emulsion, but I think it happens almost naturally. It is a clear thing. It's the mayonnaise that you might make in your kitchen is an emulsion, but this is a microemulsion. It's constructed at the atomic level when it doesn't make obvious visual particles, which is why you look at emulsions and they're cloudy or white. In fact, that becomes how you start testing some of the adequacies of your mixtures when you do your tests for salts and sugars and things like that. Microemulsions are clear, stable, isotropic mixtures of oil, water, and surfactant. That's soap, in a way, if you can say it. And they have these things called co-surfactants. When you get into the rarefied area of these very sophisticated, the surfactants need helpers. And you'll see some of these in the vaccines, which means you're into some very sophisticated, that's how sophists work here. Psychopaths work here. Oh, man. Oil, water, and surfactant. That's all you're dealing with. You're dealing with sophisticated mayonnaise, I suppose. But this works at a whole different level because what comes out is clear. The molecules are so small and they don't have any effect on light. They may have an effect, let's say, on fluorescence, but not essentially light as far as our visual cues would make it cloudy, obstructed, or change, or anything like that. looks like clear water. But it's a mixture of oil and fat and a surfactant. Micro-emulsions act as a potential drug carrier systems for oral, topical, and parenteral administration, which is injection IVs, parenteral. They offer the advantage of spontaneous formation, ease of manufacturing and scale-up, thermodynamic stability, and improved drug solubilization and bioavailability. Microemulsions do all this. Perhaps a pharmaceutically acceptable dosage form demands a clear understanding. Preparing a pharmaceutically accepted dosage form demands a clear understanding of microemulsion structure, phase behavior, factors leading to its thermodynamic stability, and the potential uses and limitations of the microemulsion system. Speaking to what I just commented, there is thought behind what's going on. This is just not somebody who mixed the coffee and found something floating that they could use in the morning. This is a very learned subject. And it's so exacting at some level when you get more into it. But moving on to the abstract, knowledge of the various methods available to thoroughly characterize a microemulsion system is essential. While microemulsion is used in several fields, in this review, the one I'm reading, the pharmaceutical applications are emphasized. Several references are cited, but the list is by no means exhaustive. The review is written so that a newcomer to the field can easily grasp the important facts pertaining to this novel delivery system. Remember, they're focused here on the topical, but they then go into some others. Microemulsion, as I go back in through and I'll read some more of this, is stable, clear, isotropic. They restate the go on to the next sentence. The aqueous phase may contain salts. So go back to your ingredients list in your mind, and other ingredients, and the oil, in quotes, the oil may actually be a complex mixture of different hydrocarbons or olefins. In contrast to ordinary emulsions, microemulsions form upon simple mixing of the components and do not require the high shear conditions generally used in the formation of an ordinary emulsion or making your mayonnaise in the blender. Or with a fast whisk in your hand, I suppose. So this is the interesting problem. These microemulsions just form up by mixing them together when the balance is just right. And they talk all about this in this article. Fascinating article. The two basic types of microemulsions are direct. Oil dispersed in water, O/W, or reversed. Water dispersed in oil. Folks, this is all you're dealing with. This is all you're dealing with here. A little bit of Dawn thrown in and you got yourself a mixture of some oil and water that just splashed together. It won't be what they're making in the vaccine, but that's all we're talking about. Oil and water, mixing oil and water. You thought oil and water can't mix. Fascinating, isn't it, what they tell us and what they can do? In ternary systems, such as microemulsions, where two immiscible phases, water and oil, are present, and they keep putting quotes around this oil because they know that they can synthesize this stuff. It's not oil. It has the chemical structure of a head and a tail that will attach to a surfactant that can be attached to a water molecule. The synthesized stuff. And present with a surfactant, the surfactant molecules may form a monolayer at the interface between the oil and the water with the hydrophobic tails of the surfactant molecules dissolved in the oil phase and the hydrophilic, those that like the water, the hydrophobic doesn't like water, rejects water, and the hydrophilic likes water. Heads the groups in the aqueous phase. So the oil phase and the hydrophilic heads group in the aqueous phase. Let me go back to what they described this RNA code. It has a head, a cap, and a tail. It is its own oil. It's its own oil, it would be the oil, because it's in a lipid, oil phase for one of these mixtures, all by its own construction. And we see one of the ingredients, if we can find information for, is toxic on contact with skin. Causes infertility problems. So, here, listen to the, here's the, we got the tails and the heads talked about. And they talk about them in the hydrophilic and hydrophobic. And you just got to keep, one hates water and one loves water, or loves oil. And those are the ones, it's the fact that has each one of those, and that's what plugs into either the water or the oil at the same time with this intermediary called a surfactant. Something akin to soap, if you, you know, lecithin's kind of that way too. As in the binary systems, water surfactant or oil surfactant, self-assembled structures of different types can be formed, ranging, for example, from inverted spherical to cylindrical micelles to lamellar phases and bicontinuous microemulsions, which may coexist with predominantly oil or aqueous phases. And so they've got, they're controllable, they can make different things that coexist. And I'm looking at all these chemicals that are in these fanciful lipids and saying, well, what are they all doing? I mean, this is way beyond me to go, but I see all the components for what they're talking about here. And so I'm going to drop on down because I want to get to really, as I get to the point here, it's really a fascinating read for those of you that might be into it. They talk more specifically about this. It is in somewhat of a readable level. You don't need to be a chemist to understand it. There would be some words you need to do. But anyway, getting on to, they talk about the theory, how it all works. I got the feeling they really don't understand because of the, there's no energy to put into it. They just spontaneously create when you have the right mixture. And they've worked out how to do that. So this is the other thing. There's a lot of thought behind to make this, these kinds of things. They go through and explain, well, you then use the word pseudo-ternary phase, a diagram. So again, this is all analogs. We get, go down and through, we read, and they talk about how all this is going to work, and that's kind of a dry read in a way. And then they go through what they can use, and you go back, I keep, as I'm reading this, I'm trying to discuss, you got to read this and then keep in mind what the ingredient list is. Even if you can't really identify it and aren't a chemist, you will see what they are in the ingredient list is what these things do in their discussion in this article, in those vaccines. And then they just talk common excipients used to formulate microemulsions are oleic oil, castor oil, corn oil, peanut oil, sesame oil. And they give a list of surfactants, the sorbates you may hear in your food. Then they have PEG, P-E-G, 300, caprylic acid. Remember, they had PEG, that's the propylene ethylene glycol, as 2,000 is the one they use. There's your glycol component, your alcohol component, and which is in a different form. And then they have the co-surfactant, which is propylene glycol. So when you see propylene glycol in the list, it's added as a co-surfactant. And what I was reading, if I understood this correctly, they add the co-surfactant because the surfactant wasn't quite enough, and they had to adjust that with another surfactant in order for the balance to be exact, because they couldn't do it simply with one surfactant. And then they talk about the advantages of microemulsion-based systems. Microemulsions are thermodynamically stable systems. Now you'll listen here and you'll find everything we talked about earlier, I talked about in the other articles, is what they are doing here with this microemulsion to further confirm what you're looking at. The ingredient list is the making of a microemulsion encapsulation system to deliver the payload that they want to program your cells with. And again, it gets numbers and they get down to the chemistry sizes and all. I won't bore you. If you're that interested, really get this and read it. It tells you a lot of what's going on in this. And I wanted to get further down, as I don't have the time to go through all this information on how it all works and what they apply it to and what they test for. And they said that pharmaceutical applications, I get down to parenteral delivery, that's injections, like IVs and injection, normal needles, oral delivery, topical delivery, ocular or pulmonary delivery. And this is where I get to the point of what I wanted to find out. They also have microemulsions in biotechnology. Why is that in addition to this? And that's what they're talking about, biotechnology. Parenteral administration, especially via the intravenous route of drugs with limited solubility, is a major problem in industry because the extremely low amount of drug actually delivered to a targeted site. All right, so this doing the injections is difficult when you use microemulsions. Microemulsion formulations have distinct advantages over macroemulsion systems when delivered parenterally because of the fine particle microemulsion is cleared more slowly than the coarse particle emulsion and therefore have a longer residence in the body. So on the other hand, I was saying you break up this, if you make a bigger coagulated mass, the body will clear it out quicker. That's a thought, as a future thought here. That both O and W and WO microemulsions are used for parenteral delivery. Those clear liquids that you're being injected with are microemulsions. Why? They need them in order because that injection route is not a very bioavailable route, interestingly. Your body just resists it. That's why they have to use those adjuvants to get your body to respond to it, because it's not going to want to respond to all that stuff. And so they trick the body. And I'm going to get, that goes back to more scientific things. Again, pay attention to they mentioned propylene glycol here. The alcohols were replaced with parenterally accepted co-surfactants, ethylene glycol. The others were too harsh for the body. No, so they use propylene glycol to stick a contact killer inside of that. Isn't that interesting? What I found more fascinating in the oral delivery section, and I think we'll stop right here, they do an admission. They go back to the parenteral injection. Therefore, microemulsions have been reported to be ideal delivery of drugs for such as steroids, hormones, and diuretics and antibiotics. Pharmaceutical drugs of peptides and proteins are highly potent and specifically in their physiological functions. However, most are difficult to administer orally. With an oral bioavailability of conventional formulation of less than 10%, they are usually not therapeutically active by oral administration. Because of their low oral bioavailability, most protein drugs are only available as parenteral formulations. However, peptide drugs have an extremely short biological half-life when administered parenterally, so require multiple dosings. What is the protein spike but a peptide? Gives us the clue back to the future that they were already knew they were going to have to use multiple dosings because this protein has a very short half-life in your body. And so we're watching the use of this technology by the CDC in their guidances for when they're telling vaccinated people what's up. They're speaking through this technology on what's going on. And that the parenteral inclusion in the oral delivery was a really big deal for me when I saw it relative to that peptide protein. And they're telling you how hard it is to do what they're doing, and yet they're going to continue to try and do it. And this raises the technology up. Again, we're not dealing with people who just accidented into this yesterday, not just last year. This has been ongoing. This has been a long study to get this into this, and it's planned. So I wanted to remind us that this hydrogel just didn't come out of nowhere, that it was on the books, on the table. These are highly, highly detailed and planned, programmable agents. I ran down another article, injectable hydrogel could someday lead to more effective vaccines. I won't read through it. We just read some of that in there, but what I want to read through is what they were going to apply this to. It was from the American Chemical Society, a biological organization, the American Chemical Society, further upholding or supporting at least what I've been telling you. This is a chemical weapons attack. The vaccines have curtailed the spread of serious, and I'm not underwriting the statement. I'm just going to show you they know about what they're going to use it for, that they told us before. Vaccines have curtailed the spread of several infectious diseases, such as smallpox, polio, and measles. However, vaccines against some diseases, including HIV-1, influenza, and malaria, don't work very well, and one reason could be the timing of antigen and adjuvant presentation to the immune system. Could be, they don't even know. My main thing here to tell you is that they understood they were attempting to get the HIV to be relevant. And the body rejects it. And so they have to create a Trojan horse. And they've been working since the beginning of the 80s, I would say, based in this. And they also, even though they know they can't keep up with influenza, they're still looking to try and do that, which becomes COVID-19 symptoms. Notwithstanding that malaria, I thought they said they use hydroxychloroquine to fight, right? With its quinine component. This was telling us that they already knew long before they were working with these hydrogels, which could be called, maybe sound pretty technological. We tied them in with DARPA. These are just natural structures. The heinous part is putting in something that would interfere with your cells, and in this case, be able to get past every natural defense and still allow the transfection of the software of life, which then explodes those particles out and then puts those into other cells. And then you, at some point, being the obedient vaccinated one, become the spreader, the shedder, and then you affect someone who didn't, and there was no real protection if you weren't paying attention. And those of us that are listening, I hope, are paying attention, that we start really looking closely at maybe the alternative to what you call prophylactics. Another story, lipogels. So here with the fat gel, this is all we're talking about. A single lipid bilayer enclosed hydrogel spheres. Another science study done. You just know they're here, folks. You just read it. You can see this is not fantastic. This is not like too fantastical technology. The need, the balance is very, very specific. But the knowledge has been known. They say here, we have fabricated lipogels consisting of single POPC lipid bilayer supported by micrometer-sized thermoresponsive hydrophobically modified HM hydrospheres. The hydrogel consists of a lightly cross-linked poly-N isopropyl acrylamide. There's your acryl component, which is critical to this one. The lipid bilayer was assembled by binding liposomes to HM microgels, followed by several cycles of freeze and thaw. And so they're talking to you about this. They go through how they're programmable thermally. They say their fluorescent studies confirm that fusion of lipocells is into a continuous single bilayer at a temperature of the BPT. It was found that the volume decrease in the hydrogel was coupled to the appearance of highly curved obstructions and uncompromised lipid bilayer into the surroundings. It is anticipated that these properties in lipogels will prove to be useful in drug delivery applications and in fundamental biophysical studies of membranes. The membranes is what they're studying in you experimental rat. Okay, so this is all known stuff. This is not fantastical things. Anybody heard of hydrogel? This is just simple everyday make mayonnaise type stuff, but it happens to be microemulsions, which are kind of interesting on their own, in that they're self-assembling in a way. Not in a heinous way. They just do that out of the fact that they coexist. The heinous part is someone's in the chemistry lab making up these things with heads and tails so that they'll, in finding the surfactants and co-surfactants, to do them to then drop a bioweapon on you that's in the form of a chemical weapon. Then we get over into a link for hydrogels. And you look through what they can do. Fascinating things what they can do. We get down to the chemistry, not biology here. Common ingredients include polyvinyl alcohol, polyethylene glycol, there's your one that's in the ingredients list, sodium polyacrylate, acrylate polymers and copolymers, and an abundance of hydrophilic groups, and natural proteins such as collagen, gelatin, and fibrin. So there is your chemistry. It's not biology that they're using, and some of it's natural, and some of these hydrocarbon chemicals, one of which is polyethylene glycol, just what we found in the prior links explaining what the ingredients were and what they might do. Hydrogel uses side effects, interactions, pictures, and warnings. So there's information of this knowledge that's been out there. Whether or not we've understood it, we want to sensationalize it. It's as common as, if you will, mayonnaise in your kitchen. But what was interesting to me on this next one, what I just read to you, the uses for hydrogel. consult a pharmacist. How to use hydrogel, consult your pharmacist or physician. Side effects, consult your pharmacist or physician. In the U.S., call the FDA, or in Canada, call your Health Canada. Precautions, consult your pharmacist or physician. Interactions, consult your pharmacist. You get the idea here, folks? Well, as natural as some of these things are, when you come to medications, you better consult your pharmacist or physician, because these are next and beyond what most people have an understanding about. And then this moved into a whole bunch of very interesting consequences, which now leads us into the future, why we need to know about this for our loved ones, even those that took the vaccine for sure. What, and then watching what goes on and being aware. Maybe you get a contact exposure as a chemical weapons delivery. You need to understand this. You need to have something in your brain here, which came through a colleague here, an email, found out some fascinating things that came from the radiological websites. Researchers warn about post-COVID-19 vaccine impact on imaging. Fascinating thing. I didn't know what this was about. I wanted to do a deeper study. I have quite a few links, I suppose, that you could read. But the COVID-19 causes a couple of problems which MRI technicians need to know about so that they don't misdiagnose the problems that COVID-19 causes when your lymphatic system goes nuts and blows up your organs to be looking like you have serious problems, in particular for cancer patients. It masks and mimics a problem that you may not have. This is a serious complication. It's going inside the medical industry now for MRI imaging. The race to develop and execute effective COVID-19 vaccination programs in full force as the world grapples with staggering numbers of COVID-19 infections. And there is no test. So much for this one. However, you need to know what this thing can do. When you go to get an image, MRI, it will show things that you need to know is there in case your doctor, your technologist misses them. It says radiologist familiarity and evidence-based guidelines are needed to avoid follow-up imaging and biopsies for reactive adenopathy after COVID-19 vaccination, she wrote this doctor, Shabnam Mortazavi. Okay. Anyway, they're talking about breast imaging as well. They go on and explain the problem of this interference by this this treatment, this chemical attack. Up to 40% of COVID-19 survivors experience neurological effects. 40% of COVID-19 survivors experience neurological effects. Everyone who gets a vaccine becomes a survivor if you didn't die. 40% of you will have neurological effects. What was SM-102 but a neurological agent? Another story, you can read it. I guess I could read these, but no, these are not guesses. And by golly, this is coming through the neuroimaging websites that they have to watch out for. It's a big cha-ching that they now get to do more. They're actually promoting they could use imaging to follow what the false positive, follow what the COVID-19 is doing to people. Grimmer, thank you for what you do at reallibertymedia.com. Appreciate all you do, everyone, the syndicators and all that. And folks, we got to protect ourselves. The blogcaster have all these links. I hope I did this part justice, that you can be more well-informed. We may have another step to have to protect ourselves in, and I think we can. It's just knowing about it, correct? And the whole system is going to be made to make more money off of all this. So I'll be with you next week, Tech Diffs, where nature will.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
that's what opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, I just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.